First of all, it is November 2nd, and I am interviewing Gary Patterson.
Jerry.
Oh, Jerry, sorry. I have a class all morning. How do you spell Jerry? Is it with a G or a J?
With a G, yeah. Gerald is my proper name.
Okay. So you were saying that you were at two different bases in Europe?
Yes, first tour was 1952 till 1956 at 2nd Fighter Wing.
Mm-hmm.
In Gros Tonkin, France, which is a very poor part of France.
Yeah, it must have been a shock.
Well, it's like stepping back into the 16th century. They would have a horse and a cow pulling a plow because they were terribly poor people and they didn't peasants. Okay, hate to use the word, but they were.
Yeah.
And they grew things like sugar beets and didn't get paid very much for them, and they lived in what would have been in another time fortified villages.
Oh wow.
Yeah, the little villages were, there weren't farmhouses on farms, they all lived in a little village.
Mm-hmm.
And took the animals out every day to the fields and went out to the fields themselves. And the pumps, water pumps, were at the front of their houses, that is to say on the, where the road went through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all the manure went, and it got piled up around the pumps, and I was given to understand that was so the pump wouldn't freeze in the wintertime. So the animals were kept in the floor level of the houses, and people lived above. Well, we had a little visit with some people there that we had met, and farm folks.
Mm-hmm.
And we drank quite a bit of beer and stuff. And so when you had to go to the bathroom, they didn't have a shower, so you went downstairs and put the cow out of the way and did whatever there. It was really primitive.
Yeah, it sounds. How long had you been married when you moved there?
2 years.
2 years? You didn't have any children yet?
Yes, we had one.
One?
Yeah, move all was one.
Was it hard to move to?
Well, because there were no accommodations at Two Wing, several of us rented an accommodation in the south of England.
Oh.
In Sussex.
Mm-hmm.
And so near Bognor Regis, and it was really very nice there. And so we installed our wives with the thought that we could nip back and forth.
Yeah.
In a fighter, you know, boom, boom. Well, the first time I took an F-86 to Europe and landed at an RAF station, which was very near to where we were living,
mm-hmm.
in Sussex, they didn't have a starter for my airplane. We're all supposed to be interoperable, but we weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And so they plugged in their number one best battery cart, and it gave me enough power to get the engine windmilling enough to light it carefully. And it overheated a bit, but it burned up their battery cart. It burst into flames. That was the end of that.
Oh no.
I was invited not to come back anymore with my fighter in there. So we didn't get over as often as we wanted. Occasionally we would take a C-45, a bug smasher, and which is a Beech-18. Also called a Wichita vibrator.
Oh.
And we call them bug smashers. Because driving along the countryside, you did tend to collect a lot of bugs on your windshield. And anyway, we were able to get over a couple of times there, but it was not very satisfactory arrangement. And so what we did as the station was to rent a whole lot of English seaside caravans.
Oh.
And they were little, being, you know, seaside rentals.
Mm-hmm.
And so divided a fighter dispersal, Marguerite, in half and put all the trailers around the fighter dispersal petals of the Marguerite. And the other half was inhabited by fighter airplanes. So you're pretty close to your work. And that's where we lived. And there was no water, so that the construction engineering section would bring water around, and the back of a pickup truck had a big barrel and hand pump it up into your little 10-liter tank in the trailer. And the trailers really were small. They were only 8 feet wide, outside measurements, because that was the limit of British road width allowance for trailers, caravans, as they called them. And ours was 12 feet long. It was 8 by 12.
It's quite small.
That's pretty small for two people on the babby. A couple of years went by and we had another little girl born in France. By that time we had a somewhat bigger caravan. They never got any wider, but they got quite a bit longer.
This was at Wingtail?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, always. We stayed there for 4 years.
Oh.
And because the airfield was still under construction when we flew in September of 1952, there was mud everywhere. I mean, the messes and the barracks and the roads, and there were no sidewalks. There were just deep ditches and mostly full of water and mud. And we all wore great rubber boots. Everybody from the commanding officer down wore great rubber boots. They were slopping around in mud. And the only places that were clear of mud were the taxiways and the dispersal and the runway. But elsewhere there was just, you know, with fire hoses and tankers, trucks, they could keep the mud off of the dispersal. Because you couldn't go around taxiing a fighter in that stuff, because it would suck it into the engine.
Yeah.
And goodbye engine.
Did you find, or did you have to move to Germany? Because I heard that the weather cracked the runways at Wing 2.
The runway, which was, we all swore it was floating on ping pong balls. As at one stage in that autumn, our airplanes were up to the top of the nose wheel in water.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the whole airfield flooded. And then in due course, their cheap concrete cracked, and so we had to move the whole outfit like a gypsy caravan. We moved the whole wing over to Germany, where the third fighter wing had just opened in Zweibrücken.
Mm-hmm.
And so we lived there in tents. And they towed some of the trailers over on the transport. So we had a makeshift place to live. Pretty sad. But, you know, in Germany it was a whole different ball game. The German Republic hadn't been, it was still occupation zones and that sort of thing. But we were in the, I think we were in the French zone of Germany. And the German cities were still heavily damaged and rubble everywhere, you know. Pounded the hell out of them. But they had advanced so much more than those poor people in France that we lived amongst. But it was a very marked difference.
Yeah.
They didn't have anything, the Germans. They had a lot of rubble. And that's about it. But they were very industrious. And the Marshall Plan, I think, cut in back then. So things in Germany were infinitely better.
Yeah.
The airfield was properly built, and it was a beautiful air patch with buildings of brick and mortar and real buildings, you know, instead of we were in metal shacks.
Exactly.
We really lived in very primitive conditions, and it never really got much better. The last 6 months we were there, we lived in, they had built some married quarters in the town of Saint-Evold, and for the last 6 months we moved in there, and it was marvelous, you know, to be in a building instead of a little teeny trailer. And so it was okay, and they were well built. Surrounded by mud, of course.
Of course.
Everything in that country is mud. Well, we didn't have, in the little trailer, we didn't have a proper bath. There was a little tiny bathtub, but if you emptied the water tank into it, you sat in about 3 inches of water. It was okay for the air crew, because we could always go up to the squadron barracks and have a shower.
Yeah.
A little incident which you find interesting. When we, when our wives were either in Canada or in south of England, we all lived in barracks. The heating systems didn't work. And so we had these great big howling Herman Nelson heaters.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Okay. Sitting right outside the door of the barracks. And we didn't have very many amenities. We shared a mess with the sergeants, and we all wore rubber boots inside and out, because there was no getting away from the mud.
Yeah.
And the quarters were had brown floors, or so we thought. It was our hired French batman who took care of the barracks, where, you know, the cleaning and all that sort of stuff. Polished the floors. They had these great big electric polishers that the Air Force provided, and they polished the floors. And they were dirt. But they managed to shine up these floors. We didn't think anything of it. We thought they were brown floors. Until we were sitting around, I shared another room with the other flight commander, and we had a big room, and that's where the guys used to gather in the evening, and we had a coffee maker, which was a rarity, and so we made coffee, and we sat around and drank coffee, and one of the guys was sitting on my bunk with his knife, and he was plunking the knife into the floor. You know, we were issued a survival knife.
Yeah.
And he was plunking it into the floor, and I said, "What are you doing, Swede?" And a chip had come up, and there was some color, and it was red. And he started poking at it, and we discovered that underneath all this brown floor was a red and black checkerboard tile floor.
Oh.
No kidding. And so when we posited this knowledge to the authorities, that is the base admin officer, they had all this mud scraped off all the floors. It was just amazing. But that's the way we lived.
Yeah.
Rudimentary.
Very. Did you find it different once the families got to come over and share the tiny little trailers with you?
Oh yeah, it was much better then. For our morale, if nothing else, it didn't do much for the morale of our wives, I'm sure, because moving from Bognor Regis in Sussex to the mud flats at Two Wing.
How was life different when they were there as opposed to when they weren't? I guess you had more freedom when they weren't.
Well, we were on the move all the time. Mm-hmm. I think we were doing some kind of a stunt, I'm not sure. You wouldn't remember, but before the war, there was kind of a stunt that the Luftwaffe did when, you know, before the war started. They didn't have a whole bunch of Messerschmitt fighters, but they flew them all over. So it appeared like there were a lot of them, and they would paint the spinners, you know, the propeller hubs, in a checkerboard, and they'd fly off to some place, and clean the paint off the spinner and paint it in a spiral. And so it looked like a whole bunch of different airplanes all.
Yeah.
And terrified everybody at the time, I guess. The French Air Force was pretty ill-equipped, and the British Air Force was just starting to get up to speed with Hurricanes and Spitfires. And so it put the wind up everybody, and I think we were doing a stunt like that. We were the only Air Force in Europe that had airplanes that would combat the MiG-15. The U.S. Air Force had a squadron, I think, of F-86A models, which were pretty primitive. I trained on them at the Top Gun school, and they were really a rudimentary airplane. We had new ones with all automated equipment in them, and so we spent a whole lot of time on the road here in various air bases in Germany and in France and in North Africa and up to Norway and Denmark. And it seemed to me we were moving all the time.
Yeah.
Which didn't do much for the morale of our wives when they did arrive, because we were gone so much of the time.
Yeah.
When our second child was born at 2 Fighter Wing, I was way up in North Germany, in the British zone.
Oh, wow.
You know,
yeah.
Being a presence there. Anyway, that's, I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you did. Thank you. Did you get to, even though you were away a lot, were you still involved in the children's lives? And
oh, yes.
When you were there?
Oh, yes.
They're got all, to help raise them?
We all had pretty tiny children. There weren't a lot of children, but those that were there were very young, and we were all of an age, and so our families were all, you know, we'd all just been newly graduated pilots and newly married and newly with children.
Even though France was kind of a little bit barbaric, did you still have different social occasions that the families could take part in on Friday nights or Saturday nights?
Oh, yes. As the mud subsided and things dried out in the spring of 1953, they finished the sergeant's mess and they were able to move into their own mess, and so the officers had their own and the sergeants had theirs. And corporals and airmen had a mess. And so we had all the normal functions. We'd have dinners and dances, and we had to make our own entertainment. There was nothing locally. As a big event for Marnie was that we would leave our little fellow with friends, and little fellow the same, and we go down to Strasbourg, and we could have a trout dinner at Sauvergne on the way, and have a weekend in Strasbourg at a hotel called the Red Door.
Oh.
And have a bath. And we spent a whole weekend in, you know, getting in and out of the bathtub. And dining well in the restaurants of Strasbourg. It was a lovely old city.
Was this in France?
And I had a cousin. Yes.
Yeah.
And I had a cousin in right down on the Rhine. And I had a cousin in Paris. So we managed to. And I drove a little catch of old Renault, you know, little teeny Renault. And we could zoom down the roads to Paris and visit my cousin, who had a flat in the just up behind the Palais de Chaillot in Paris.
Okay.
Close to the Seine.
How much? It's 126.
Okay.
I'll just ask you one more question.
Okay.
How did they get you there in the first place if the conditions were so horrible? Was this just part of the job?
Oh, we flew our fighters in.
No, I mean, like, how did they convince you to go there?
Well, they said, you guys, the three squadrons are all going to two fighter wing.
Oh, and you were
all? We thought, well, we're flying through an airfield they've built in France. Well, it was mostly built. And most of it didn't work, and I'd have to look in my logbook, but we didn't do a lot of flying for the first few months. We were contending with rain and mud, you know. And we had no dispersal shack or anything, so they built a wooden flat and put a big tent on it, and so the airmen and the pilots and everybody huddled in this great big tent with a little pot-bellied stove. And in due course, they finished a couple of hangars, and so we had some offices and a place to put our airplanes in out of the rain when they're changing an engine, you know, sort of thing. So it improved pretty rapidly, but it never did ever get up to the standard of the other NATO airfields.
No.
It was just a crummy old place. I think everybody was pleased as punch when Charles de Gaulle kicked us out of France.
Couldn't have thanked him enough.
Yeah. Thank you, mon général. Wonderful, wonderful.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to do this. I don't want to keep you.
Okay, I think...